Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm SDPB Online's Ken Osborne. Following the news from SDPB Radio, we'll discuss the latest in tech, including the rumors on Apple's big announced day, the Windows 8.1 update making life easier some more businesses being hacked, even some local ones. Of course, we'll take time for your questions and comments. Connect with us at facebook.com/techradio, message us on Twitter at SDPB, and our phone number, 800-524-3604. The email address, of course, midday@sdpb.org. Dakota Midday Tech Radio is on the air after this news. Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for August 22nd. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. You can also drop us an email, send it to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists, Mac Guru Joel Brovelite, Lemelie's John T. Meyer. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you?
And Jeff Litterick, Technology Integration Specialist from Peer, joins us today. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
A couple of quick things I wanted to talk to with you specifically about today. I found myself in a situation today buying a laptop for a kid going to college.
Oh,
believe it or not, we got up this morning. He said, "Hey, let's go buy a laptop." And I went, "Oh, all right." You know, and
where's he going to school?
He's going to go to Dakota Wesleyan in Mitchell.
Yep.
And I'm half surprised that he wants a traditional laptop because he's been an iPad, a school-sanctioned iPad user for the last couple of years. And I thought, well, maybe he's made the switch and just wants to get a Bluetooth keyboard and thinks he's going to. But no, he wants the traditional laptop. So anyway, we ended up with an Asus.
Back in the spring, I think we had a really good, pretty hot debate about that topic. If you were going to school today.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would you take?
And, you know, I guess maybe we could bring that back because there's like 900 freshmen moving in Vermilion this morning as I was exiting town.
So how many?
Yeah. So, and I said, hey, I nudged him as we were driving by, and I said, hey, there's more kids moving in than goes to school in the entire university you're going to check into.
Question, does he know, he's a brand new freshman, does he know his major or what he wants to study?
Because
I think that, to me, dictates a little bit what I would use. If I were going to be like an English major or journalism or was planning to write and create a lot of content and have to write a lot of papers, I would want a laptop. But, you know, at the same time, bio major, you're looking at a lot of presentations and taking notes in class. I could see an iPad.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Bio major is pretty much going to be right down his thing. He's going to do some wildlife management. So it's basically biology. He'll be in with all the nursing students and everybody else doing the chem and all that stuff.
Sure.
But then towards the end of his stay there, it'll go off into more specific wildlife management sort of thing. So, but he'll be a biologist at heart if he stays with that major.
Sure, yeah. Which, pretty early.
Which we all know.
He's day zero.
I think the statistic nowadays is kids will change their majors up to 5 times.
Whoa.
In their 4 years at a college. Right, Joel?
As long as they get it right the last time, I think that's the important part.
That is the important part, absolutely. So bought a laptop today, and it's an Asus, and I'm pretty happy with it. I happened to mention to the guy, I said, what's the big deal, lately, or what's made your life easier? And he says, that Windows 8.1 update. And I said, well, what's specifically about it? And he said, it's the ability to skip the tiles thing and go right to a traditional desktop. He says, it's made my customers' lives so much easier. And I went, oh, okay. I didn't know that, but I was just going to talk to Jeff quick and see, since he brought up that this 8.1 update was such a monumental thing for him, is there anything besides the fact that you can get to the desktop easier? Was there anything in that update, Jeff, that makes it easier on businesses or any other things that just besides security?
There were a lot of improvements to the mail client. A lot of stuff that was kind of missing for people who are kind of used to Outlook and especially kind of power email users. It was mainly, just a lot of little tiny improvements in different apps, especially, like I said, mail and in browsing some stuff and some of the screen gestures. And, of course, now Windows Update 2 is going to be out here soon, too. That's not as big as a jump. They're not making any major changes like they did in Update 1. It's basically just a whole bunch of small little fix-its and little, you know, everyday life improvements in different applications. And then, of course, the big news is now September 30th, which isn't that far away, Windows 9 will go into consumer preview, which means it will be released early next spring. So,
okay, is that
and
is
Windows
that
a... 9 is a radical departure once again. They in Windows 9 they went back to Windows 7 style. The default will always be to boot to the desktop. Yes, Metro apps will run and stuff, but it's more of a day of more. You have Windows 7 type UI as the default, and then you have the option to use the Metro and the other interface. So there's going to be a big radical departure. Some features in Windows 8.8 are going to be missing in 9 because they were more centered around the Metro interface and Tile interface.
Yeah, I think in our price point this morning, there were a number of laptops, and some of them had the screen that you could touch. They were traditional laptops, but had a touch screen. Of course, there are the reversible ones out now that were probably a little bit out of our price range. But boy, in the sub $400 range, in the $300 to $400 range, in the high 200s, there's a lot of options out there in the AMD and in the Intel chips. Not even just Celerons and Durons or whatever they're calling the Durons nowadays in AMD, but I guess more full-blown chipsets. I was kind of surprised, frankly.
Well, Intel especially has been trying to break into the tablet smartphone. So they have been driving over the past couple of years, especially their process into more lower power, more affordable packages. While not still, sacrificing the high end, they have quite a few offerings now all the way through the range. And with that, of course, allows you to make the cheaper laptops and stuff without sacrificing much in power.
Yeah. We just sort of looked at it from a processing standpoint a little bit, because I said, basically anything out there is gonna handle a term paper and do social media. But we wanted something that was, he could keep for a number of years as long as he didn't break it or get stolen or, probably the two biggest things that happen to laptops. I'm not sure,
And that
spills
and
beverages on them.
That's probably an important thing to bring up, too. Unless you're a dedicated engineering major, an architect, that it's going to require very high-end specialized programs like CAD programs and very number-crunching type programs. Almost any laptop out there, i.e. tablet, the bigger difference, of course, is screen size and keyboard, built-in or not, is going to satisfy 99.99% of everyone out there, outside of maybe people playing games on them. And even that is so much better nowadays, it's pretty close. So, it's really the user's choice and preference anymore.
Yeah, it was precious, the looks on people's faces at the store this morning with, there's probably 8 different laptops lined up, maybe as much as 10 or maybe a dozen,
sure,
because it was 2 rows back to back. And there were kids without adults and adults without kids looking for laptops. And they're just, their eyes just sort of glaze over because there's, different colors and different, different styles and different things. But they were kind of all the same thing.
Yeah.
And so trying to split the hairs on exactly what you were buying that day, today, was kind of the interesting. I found myself being interviewed by a college freshman asking me, "Well, why did you go with that one, or why are you doing this, or what do you think about that?" And I'm like, "Okay, well,
In many ways, if I was going back to school, I'd probably not care too much about manufacturer. I'd look for one that's really well built and sturdy. Just because laptops, especially when you're hauling them around all the time, do take punishment. And that's probably going to be the biggest issue for most people with a laptop nowadays, is how long it will last and how well it will keep up to the abuse the user puts it through.
I must say we did choose a shell that seemed to be more of a, of aluminum skin versus the all-plastic, kind of flimsy. I mean, you just pick them up and they kind of flex, and every time you move the display, everything just sort of flexes and moves, and it's kind of like, oh, this.
And a good thing is to always watch the hinges. That's where most
sturdy
laptops tend to want to break first or crack, in the cases is right around the hinges. So good hinges go add years to many laptops.
Hey, there's probably the big tip for the day. Good hinges.
Or no hinges.
Yeah.
Or no hinges.
Or no hinges at all.
Yeah, you get one of those tablet laptop deals, you know, that clip off like the new Surface.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. Jeff, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, I guess, in the first segment here, was there was a big UPS hack announced. What do we need to know about that? There was some, was it point of sale type systems, or what was going on there?
Exactly that. Just like Target. If you remember Target here, not quite a year ago, it was last Christmas. A hacker group got in and installed malware on the point of sales that stole credit card, debit card, PIN numbers from ATM cards, all those kind of good things, directly when you swipe the card. It's the same thing that happened to the UPS store. So it wasn't if you're using their website and just shipping stuff, that was a problem. But if you gave a card or if you swiped a card or used a debit ATM card at one of the affected retail locations, one of which is in South Dakota in Sioux Falls, hackers have your information. So just like in Target, you need to change out the credit card. Especially if you know you use that credit card at UPS, it might be a good time to call the credit card company and have them change out their account number, or watch it very, very carefully to see if there's any activity. It's not guaranteed that you will be, taken advantage of in this case and your card will be used. But they do know they had the malware. They do know the credit cards were stolen. Same thing with ATM cards and stuff. If you have an ATM, good time to go to an ATM and change your PIN, just to be on the safe side.
Are other solutions for like the LifeLocks and the other companies, are those good values? And is that a way to go to try to, I guess, help?
Well, I'll put it this way. For full identity theft, if you are truly someone actually did full identity theft and got a whole bunch of other cards and stuff in your name besides just using your credit card, it could cost you quite a few thousands of dollars to get out of it. You have to kind of view it as kind of an insurance. Now, cards themselves are all limited at most to 50, and I haven't heard of any company that actually, will even enforce that. They always take care of it for credit cards and ATM cards and debit cards and stuff. But it's always good to watch your account. Don't be lapsed and not look at your statements and stuff. Always watch them. And if you detect activity, be vigilant with your company and your bank to get that handled as fast as possible. I kind of view it as insurance. If you're a high-risk person, especially if your upper executive in a company, you are a good target. They will try to. Because they know they can get lots of credit in your name and stuff like that. You may be more interested in those kind of services and stuff. For the average Joe, I don't think it's quite to that point, but you do need to be pretty vigilant on watching your financials.
It's interesting that you say insurance, because I think at my last insurance review, maybe a month ago with my insurance agent, we sat down and went through all the cars and the everything, and he said, hey, we've got this identity theft insurance. And I went, really? He's like, yeah, I don't know, it was a couple of bucks. It wasn't a thing. I'm like, okay, well, we better do that, because he did mention it. This is going to cost thousands, and we have people that will help you recover your good credit or your good name. And I went, oh, okay. Now I went ahead and did it. I mean,
I've heard good things about LifeLock as a service, but I've never used it. So
yeah, I guess I'm not.
It's pretty crazy about that UPS deal. It was less than 1% of their. It was about 1% of their U.S. Locations, and the one on Minnesota Avenue there by the juice stop was one of the 51 locations affected.
So. Only 25 offices for UPS were infected, and we just happened to catch one in our state. One thing I will point out also, besides your financials, also important to really keep, and this is what a lot of the LifeLocks and stuff do, is keep a really close eye on your credit score, because any changes in that is a very good early indication that people are doing bad things. And what LifeLock and stuff can go beyond is they can detect anyone checking to see what your credit status is, which is a precursor to a lot of stuff. So they do speed up, and they can block a lot of stuff that you would have to spend money to fix afterwards. I know One thing I do, Discover Card now, this is if you log into the online website to check your statement, it gives you your credit score right there. So, you know, I kind of watched that even through the month a couple of times to make sure that number really shouldn't be changing all that much, especially if I'm not making any purchases or, you know, doing anything. That number should be pretty safe. If it changes, you need to look into it immediately before it gets out of hand.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. We've got a September 9th, is it? Big Apple announcement?
Maybe.
And I want to talk little bit about a cooler that might become the greatest or the largest Kickstarter campaign ever.
Well, let's do that after this. And welcome back to this. I guess we can call it the Back to School edition of Tech Radio, August 22nd. Join us, of course, September 5th is our next Tech Radio, so drop that or ask Siri to remind you to listen to us on September 5th, and we'll be back right after the holiday. That'll be great. Again, today's panelists, Matt Garrido, Joel Brovelade is here, Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer, and of course, Jeff Litterick, a technology integration specialist and peer, is with us via the phone system here. So we've got a couple of iPhones that are going to get announced or supposedly announced on September 9th. Something that you thought would never happen, a larger iPhone. You know, people have been calling for larger phones from Apple for
yes.
a long time. So
yes, absolutely.
We got a 4.7 and a 5.5 coming out.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, TBD. The I think it's likely that we'll see the 4.7, the 5 or larger is probably likely, but maybe not for sure. I do know from somebody I know who knows somebody that they actually sent
the ghost of Steve Jobs.
Right. I wish. They sent at least one component just now back to engineering. So with less than a month to go, they're reworking a major component of the phone.
Well,
to get it the way they
rare.
Want it. Yeah. Well, it's not super rare for Apple. It's a little more rare on something like a phone that, you know, is so wide release. So that could push that date back. They haven't officially announced that it's going to be September 9th. So that date could change. I think it's likely, more than likely, we're going to see a new phone this fall. It may not be September 9th, although it seems likely.
What's the dimensions on the current? Is it like about 4 inches?
Yeah.
So we're going to 4.7. So not a big increase there.
Yeah, unless you call, you know, 20% or 22% not big. I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's pretty large.
Yeah, 22%. It's like, it's only 22% higher than $100 for your dinner. That's not
much. Compared to going to 5.5.
Yeah, it's clearly that's much bigger.
I would say it's slight compared to that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
anyway, why do people want bigger phones? I mean, is it
because they do everything on their phone? And here's the deal: I said they would never do it.
Yeah,
and when I said
go back to the archive and find that on air.
Oh, I did say that. But when I said that, there were no tablets. Tablets were not being made at that point. And then when I said it after they were making tablets,
yeah.
People were still not using their phones as a tablet.
As everything.
Yeah. You know, tablets were still kind of like this weird thing between computers and phones. And now I myself, you know, there are many times when I'll be like, oh, I'll just do that on my phone since I'm right here. So I think because the phone is everything, and maybe more than everything, I think that's the reason we're seeing a larger screen. I still think there are probably a big core of people at Apple wishing that the phone could stay the size that it is, mainly because if it gets any bigger, you cannot traverse the screen with one hand. And that's the problem with a larger screen. I wonder how they'll handle that.
Do you think this would, hypothetical question, do you think this array of product offerings would exist if Jobs were still in charge? Because I feel like he never said the iPad would get smaller and never wanted the phone to get bigger. And now you have
well,
your
the
mini,
iPad mini.
You have your mini iPad here.
The iPad mini came out when he was still alive.
Sure, it's been only 2 years, I thought.
No, I'm pretty sure. Well, put it this way. I don't remember the exact date.
He probably was there under development.
He was certainly there for development. And I think that's, again, the same thing. I think as people use the iPad, the way it got used changed quite a bit. I mean, you remember when the iPad came out, I remember all sorts of people telling me that it was completely useless and they'd never use it. And now I really can't imagine a computer world without a tablet. And, you know, as people use it instead of computers, the size is just going to change, and rightly so, towards the way people want to use it.
Sure. Would you go bigger phone?
I would go probably, well, here's the deal. I will always go for the best phone. It doesn't matter how big it is. If I had my choice, I would go for the best features on a smaller screen because I want to still be able to carry it and traverse it with one hand.
Agreed.
That's an important thing to me. And I think Kent's like, traverse it with one hand, meaning I can turn my lights on and off and turn the phone on and off with one thumb. I can hit all four corners. Now, I've got bigger hands, so a little larger screen is not going to be a problem. But if it gets too big, you know, I've had some of those Samsungs in my hand. They're great if you want to read or play games or do all sorts of awesome stuff on them. Mm-hmm. Right up to the point where you still want it to be a phone. Right now, I got mine in my wallet, and my wallet is no bigger than, slightly bigger than any wallet I've carried. And much bigger than that, personally, it just gets to be too big, and I don't like to carry a lot of stuff. So if I get my choice, I will probably go with the smallest option that still has all of the best features. I think likely that's going to be a bigger screen for me, but I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
I guess.
I don't think I'd want to go bigger.
Are there going to be any watches or anything or any wearable tech going to come out on the night?
There will be. When they announce the phone... And I'm probably going to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong about this. But when they announce the phone, it's such an important product for them. I doubt they're going to do anything else to take steam away from the phone.
Six. Yeah, I agree with that.
Personally, I think that would be a mistake. You know, we have this brand new phone, a new this and that and the other thing. Oh, and we have this other thing that we've never announced before. And then so all the stories are forget about this phone. They're too smart at marketing to do that,
right.
I think.
We will see.
I guess so.
So this cooler, a $50,000 Kickstarter. Now it's almost $10 million.
It's called the Coolest Cooler is the name of the product. It's called the Coolest. We could put it on the Facebook page. It's surpassed $9 million. It has about 10 days remaining on, I believe it was like a 30-day, which is usually the standard Kickstarter length of a campaign. So it is now in the top three ever, which is the Pebble Watch. And I believe the video game system, it's either that or is it the Oculus Rift? I don't know. The article just said the video game system and then this cooler. And with 10 days left, they think it could still pass the Pebble Watch. This thing's got a blender to mix drinks, a rechargeable battery, waterproof, it's Bluetooth speaker, smartphone charger, a lid light. You can tie down for additional gear. It's got a cutting board with a knife, wheels, a bottle opener.
Big, big rubbery wheels.
All of these things.
Yeah. My favorite part about...
The video is one of those like, and there's one more thing and one more thing.
Does it have solar or something? Or what's charging the phone and doing the Bluetooth and all that?
I think it's got a built-in battery. And I assume that that's just a really awesome option for somebody to make an add-on product that would charge it. I assume you probably have to plug it in and charge it in your car.
Well, you got that lid. Oh, I suppose that lid's a cutting board, though.
No, the cutting board comes out of the lid.
Yeah, there's a nice little
Here's
like,
the
knife.
Deal. My
so
favorite part about this Kickstarter,
lemon wedge.
Which is my favorite part about new products that have come out, is there's nothing on this cooler. Nothing on this cooler that is new or groundbreaking. We've had cutting boards in things forever. We've had wheels on coolers forever. We've had, flashlights built into things. We've had chargers built into things. But this is the perfect example of if you've got an idea, Kickstarter is a great place to go. Because if you went and pitched this to a bunch of companies, you're like, no. That's, people do that. People want a device like this because if they're going to carry a cooler and they're going to go do this, they're like, I'm going to spend $100 on a cooler. I might as well spend a bit more and not have to carry this device and this device and this device.
And here's
what's
crazy.
Such a smart idea.
About 6 months ago, 6 months ago, they tried to raise $125,000 as their goal, and they failed. You know, in Kickstarter, it's an all or nothing model, so they didn't make it.
Right.
So they came back and said, we'll just go for $50,000, and then they get $9 million.
Yeah, well, and they probably just tweaked it, added,
sure,
you know,
the video,
actually they
add some different levels
on, like, there. They show the history of the idea of the cooler that they had. It's just such a smart
this
thing.
Has got to be a value item to get that kind of response then.
A what, value what, item.
Yeah, so what's the contribution to get the product?
Yep, it's like so 185 is, yeah, to get the cooler now. There was an early bird at 165, and see, that's part of Kickstarter strategy too, is getting these little early birds so you get some cash rolling, people, mm-hmm, show that you're, you know, something cool, they want it back. But yeah, today if you want to get in, it's 185 for a cooler.
I'm guessing people perceive that as a value rather than they're saying, "Oh yeah, this is a piece of tech we really got to get involved
well,
in."
That's
it's
certainly a luxury.
Going
to
save the world.
$185 cooler, but
well, is it a really? Yeah. If it comes with a blender, buy a blender and a cooler and a charger. Seriously, you buy all that stuff.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's just a really cool device. I love that one of the features is a bottle opener. Why? I've never even seen a cooler with a bottle opener.
Yeah, that's just.
Duh.
Yeah, one of those.
Come on.
We should follow that. Yeah. estimated shipping delivery February of 15. So that's, of course, always the issue with these type of Kickstarters. You know, they're looking for 50 grand and they get 9 million. Mm-hmm. So we'll see about production and delivery.
They got to make it now. But
one thing I'll say is they need a new industrial designer because it's ugly.
You think it's ugly?
Yeah. It looks, well, here's the deal. It looks
kind of funky.
It looks like a cooler. It looks exactly like a cooler. You'd never be like, I wonder what that is. It's a cooler.
Cool sharp
because
edges.
It looks like a cooler. No, it's hideous.
You can choose. You can pay even more, I believe, for custom colors. I think the default is a bright orange.
Such a smart device. I would, if I saw that in a store, which you will.
Oh yeah.
I would totally buy that.
And it will probably retail for more than $185.
Oh, undoubtedly. That's probably $250 cooler easy.
So if I've got a great idea, and I've got one percolating in the back of my head, I do.
You do.
It's got a bottle opener in it?
No, it doesn't. It's more of an add-on product for a vehicle. But okay. And let's say Kent wants to go out and see if he can raise $10 million to develop this thing, or $10,000 or whatever, get some seed money going. As Kickstarter, what's the level, what's the barrier for entry on that now? Has it changed recently, or can I just throw a video out there and start making money?
Well, yeah, I think now you have to have a prototype.
Yeah, Kickstarter has changed their rules, so you used to be able to show like a drawing, basically, or like an AutoCAD file or something that's like, this is what we will make, you know,
okay,
so we need $1 million.
All right.
Now you have to at least have a prototype. It may not be the final version that the
I think
end
depending
user
on what it is, you know, like you don't have to have a prototype if it's an album.
Yeah, if you're writing a book
or
if you're if it's a gadgety widget type of thing. Yeah.
And why is that is there a consumer fraud thing, or
well,
is there a reason to do that?
Part of it was because it isn't intended to be like angel investing in theory. It's I mean it is a format of it, but like, mm-hmm, they also don't want it to be a store. They don't want it to be viewed as a store. Like, I'll build this if you guys pay me, and then people pay you, and then they go build it. Right? So then after, like, the Pebble Watch, of course, there was a little bit of heat because it took forever. It took over a year for people to get their Pebble Watch when they raised $10 million. And so they want to know that these people are close or getting closer to, you know, production, not just this crazy idea. Because yeah, I think they had a lot of upset customers who gave their money and, you know, waited a long time.
Yeah, they've definitely been finessing their model and making sure that the right people post to Kickstarter. You know, now there's...
The model is amazing. I mean, Kickstarter takes, I think it's 3.5% of that 9 million. Just, they're a marketplace, and they just put inventors and buyers together and shave off a little bit of that
million. It is easily, for Kickstarter, it's easily one of the best hustles that exists. I mean... Hustle, as I mean, I don't mean that.
It's a business model.
I don't mean that in the negative sense, the way it sounds.
Sure.
It's like, it's such a good idea and so worth it, and they literally do nothing for it.
But well, you got to have you got to keep the website running.
I know, I'm just
What's it take to keep a website running that's got to be able to scale?
Oh, yeah, it's tremendous.
It's an e-commerce. They're collecting money.
And they're not the only people that do this. There are other competitors, so they certainly have
course.
Become the brand or the industry leader.
I should correct myself. They don't literally do nothing, but compared to other people that are in their category, they have a lot less development to do.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't invent anything new, per se. Yeah. They have an interesting business
model. Just like
model
the cooler.
They put people together.
Anything new.
But
just had a great idea.
So yeah, if you go to a garage, you know, get some industrial designer or some build a prototype. And I would recommend, and there are a lot of blogs, a lot of great reading material out there. The marketing, like as you can see that they failed 6 months ago, the marketing around your Kickstarter is very important, and the video is very important. And, you know, making a compelling video that's the right length, not boring.
Mm-hmm.
And even the levels that you set, you know, some people are very strategic in the, you know, this one is only the early birds. So only the first 25 people who buy this get this. Or, you know, when you see people making albums or movies, you can have for $1,000 come visit the launch and have be there for the launch party of our film or the launch party of our new album. It's very strategic in the way that they set out their Kickstarter contributional levels.
Hmm. Well, that's great. So we're going to, do you say we're going to throw that out on Facebook?
I'll put the cooler up there, yeah, so people can see it. Yeah, so you still got 10 days if you want a cooler.
Facebook.com/techradio.
Of course, you'll get it in February, right, when you all, when we're all perfect time in South Dakota for
well,
a cooler.
Well, perfect time to get ready for the summer.
True.
If you're a getting ready type person. Because you'll want to buy this.
Getting ready type
you'll
person.
You'll want to buy this in July, and you'll probably have to pay $250 for it.
Sure.
Yeah. So a reminder to listeners, Facebook.com/techradio is what we're talking about here. That is the place where you can interface with us throughout the week or weeks between shows, ask questions, get answers, and see the links that we post there. I did get a note back from Willis, I think it was a couple weeks ago. He was looking for a laptop or something, and somebody's going to build him a system or something. He did mention that he did order all the parts from an online company, Newegg, and was waiting to get those assembled, and he would update us when he got that.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So building kind of a home media thing, but we're looking for an update.
Remember a few months ago when we had a guy email about looking for IT jobs? He had a law degree as well, and he was looking for IT jobs. Do you remember that? And I told him that he should use LinkedIn.
Yep.
He said to email me, and he emailed me just at the start of the show to say he got a job.
Brilliant.
In IT. And
awesome.
He attributes... part of his people skills is a big reason he got it, which he says was probably because of the law degree, because he was kind of down on the law degree. I'm not sure if it was worth it, but so congrats to Nick on finding the job.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Well, as long as we're talking about that, I've got a job open working for me. Yeah.
Run.
Making videos. Yeah, no. Hey, making internet videos. What could be funner than that?
Yeah, Kickstarter videos.
You know?
Tell us about it.
And it's a few other things, but... basically it's two new positions, actually, one in my department, which is online services, and one in marketing. And, these two people that we're going to hire will work together very closely. In fact, their jobs are very similar, just tilted the opposite way. One's kind of a social media marketing kind of angle that also produces content. But my main person is the content producer that also does audience engagement and other things through social media. So, it's hard to tell you more about it because I, you know, to a certain extent, they're going to come on board and tell me what they're going to be doing. And in certain areas, I mean, I've got an idea and we know the tools and the technology, and obviously public broadcasting has been around for a long time in South Dakota, so I can tell you about the company, but to get really nebulous about every detail of the job, we're going to, you know, sort of let that develop. And, anyway.
So where do people go for more information?
Well, there's a tediously long website, but so we condensed it down for you and made it a lot easier. So sdpb.org/workforus.
Okay.
And, not the number four.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
F-O-R.
F-O-R-us.
Yeah.
Jobs? Couldn't do /jobs?
Too late. Don't mess anybody up.
You know,
/workforus.
It was either NPR or PBS that was already using that.
Yeah,
and we
there
thought,
you go.
Well, you know, let's just keep it simple. So sdpb.org/workforus. And there's, I think there's three or four positions listed there. And, of course, if you're looking to intern, we've always got a link up there for more information on that.
Well, that sounds like a great opportunity for somebody out there.
I think Joel and I might apply.
Do a lot of that.
Together.
So.
We'll split the job just like that.
Yeah. Well, which one of you is going to be the content producer and what's going to be the social media marketer?
Yes.
It's a very symbiotic thing.
Maybe Jeff wants to.
It really is. Yeah, well.
You heard about that.
We're an equal opportunity employer.
That college job that opened up in Canada, it was $450,000 for the job to the head of the, you know, the dean of the college, the university,
mm-hmm.
And four people from the faculty applied to split the job.
Really?
Yeah, and they were actually considering it. They're like, well, that's more than we make as professors, and
yeah.
you'd have four of us for that price.
Yeah, and you get way more done.
No, yeah, well, I'm like, that's a brilliant idea.
They go for it?
It's still up in the air. I think it's a lost opportunity. More jobs should be like that. That's a great idea.
That's a really good idea.
Uh-huh.
How many CEOs could you get for some of those CEO salaries,
yeah, totally.
Right?
No kidding.
All right. Well, it is time to take another quick break. We come back, we'll tackle the third and final segment of the show and look forward to the September 5th edition of Dakota Midday Tech Radio after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio, this August 22nd edition. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. Drop us an email, send it to midday@sdpb.org. And, of course, that's the preferred method, but we take phone calls, we take tweets at sdpb.org. We'll even take texts, 3681NPR.
Snapchat questions?
Vine?
I've avoided the whole snap. Yeah, send us a Vine. Post it.
Please do.
Yeah.
That would be a great way to ask a question. That would
be a fantastic way for you to ask a question. We do have a question. Nick's writing on the subject of laptops. Can any of you recommend the models of laptops that do have the processing power to be able to handle 3D rendering for games, especially if those games' graphic engines are inefficient and poorly optimized? If so, how much would you expect to spend on one? Mentioning hinges reminds me that we also need one that's sturdy.
Jeff.
That's his wheelhouse.
Tailor-made for Jeff.
Teed it up.
Yeah. Jeff, if you were going to go buy a laptop right now for gaming or for processing or whatever, what would it be?
Well, it all really comes down to the video card for that kind of stuff. And you have to be really, really careful because while they may have the same numbers as their big cousins, and what I mean by that is the GeForce 790, you know, and it's the 700 series at the top line, and then you see a laptop with a 770M, and you think it's a good video card, and it actually turns out to be a really bad video card because it's actually using very old technology. The problem with laptops and gaming is heat. Video cards produce lots of heat. CPUs running at high CPU produce lots of heat at sustain, and they have to get rid of that heat. So where they skimp is usually in the video card. And also, you're going to pay more. You need a better quality of laptop that can disperse heat and stuff better for the high-end gaming. So most of those laptops start at $1,000 and still go above. You can find laptops. There's Alienware specializes in them, and Asus also makes them that have high-end mobile video graphics. You do need to do your research. It's a constantly kind of moving target in the laptop world. But expect to pay, you know, really good, well over $1,200, but at least $1,000 at a bare minimum to get into something that will run games halfway decently. And also remember, those laptops tend to be big, and I have a laptop like that, and the battery life is measured in minutes, not hours. If I'm running games, battery life is measured in 10 to 15 minutes tops. They're not that mobile when playing games. You have to keep them powered all the time on AC for the most part. But they're out there. But really do your research. They keep changing all the models, and I'm not quite familiar with the latest and greatest. There are sites out there that rate video cards, and I would make sure you look at that before you'd pick any model of laptop and double-check that video card.
Okay. Well, yeah, you hit on a couple of the companies I was thinking of, and that's certainly Alienware, and I mentioned Asus earlier because that is the brand of laptop I bought today, although it wasn't the gaming system, but it did appear to be rather significantly better built than anything else. I recognize the name from the old motherboards, you know. Yeah. Didn't they start out making motherboards?
Do you want to point something out, especially with gaming? Because I do. I have a gaming laptop, and I carry it around and stuff. Gaming laptops don't last as long as desktops, too. They're big, they're heavy, they're power hungry, and they produce a lot of heat inside and internal. They just don't stand up as well. You can get a much better gaming machine in a small form desktop than you could ever really be happy with a laptop. Laptops are great if you need to be portable and stuff like that. For gaming, I'd say, you know what, go get a mini case and build one. You can build it for cheaper. You'll be happier with the performance. And you know what? it's only a couple more pounds heavier maybe to lug around because you have to lug around a monitor, but you're going to have your laptop and AC power anyway, so, you know, there's not really that much difference in those. Then when you
get a good milk crate and you'd be good
to go. Oh, we'll
get
him one of those coolers.
There you go.
It's got the rubber wheels and and it's, you know, you can put some ice in there and put the laptop in there and keep it cold.
So I think what Jeff's saying is maybe if you really, really want to do gaming, maybe don't get a laptop. Maybe get a smaller tower. I think that sounds like your ultimate recommendation, huh, Jeff?
Yeah, and they make the very small form factor cubes and stuff. You get more kind of into building your home, which is actually a fun project or so, that are actually fairly small. You know, size-wise, they're only a bit taller than a laptop to take, you know, the full-height cards and stuff in it. But they weigh about the same, but they're designed for better cooling, and they don't have the monitor built in, of course. So you can change out and get bigger monitors.
It doesn't look as cool, though, when you're rolling into the coffee shop.
Most people I've seen that bought a laptop for gaming, in the end, ditch the laptop and go back to desktop. Because while it's a good idea, and it does work if you're going over to your friend's house and stuff like that constantly, they just don't stay as long. Games, your desktop will play games, newer games, longer than your laptop will.
Jeff, I'm questioning the amount of, like, do people really move around? Like, is portability important? I feel like even if you're playing with your friends, you'd be playing online and talking over chat or something.
It used to be I used to go to a lot of LAN parties. And
sure.
DSU, for example, had a LAN party every month. I'm not sure if they still do, where everyone gets together and just games for a weekend. And people still do that occasionally. There's some big ones across the country. Online has taken a lot of that stuff, but it's still, you know, meeting people and, you know, having your opponent right across where you can look him right in the face is still a kind of fun sport. But it is getting less and more and more rare to see those type of parties happening.
Sure.
Ah, all right. I was going to make a point, and I kind of lost it. But
we were going to talk about the NPR app, I know, over the break. We were going to talk about that.
Oh, well, NPR One app, you know, they sort of disrupted their own space by producing this app, which is kind of you need to sign in. It knows where you are and who you are. And,
yeah, so
what
NPR did was they didn't they've had a couple of apps before, NPR News and
good
the
apps too.
App. Very good. Similar to a lot of radio apps that, you know, will display, you know, different shows, and you can click on it and maybe get a different you know, an episode back, or just play that day, or add stuff to a playlist. That's what their old apps would do. This NPR One is a big departure. It's kind of a hybrid between just a streaming radio app and something like Pandora, but solely for their content. It's
yep.
It's very clever. You have to sign up for it, and you have to give it permission to use your microphone, and you give it your information. And in return, you just hit play. You never have to scan through and go ahead and, like, I want to listen to All Things Considered from yesterday. I want to listen to this. It will play content from your local NPR station as well as the national, and never repeat it, and go back in the archive. And periodically, the way it uses the microphone, at least in my experience recently, it says, hey, you know, that ad you just heard for this program, if you want us to play it now, say play it now, and then it'll give you a beep. You'll say it or not, and then it'll keep moving on, and it just keeps cycling through news stories. And then, brilliant stroke as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. at the top of an hour or as soon as you start it up, it gives you the latest news. Such a great idea.
Right, so latest NPR news, and then we're working on the back-end system right now for local, but it'll play the latest NPR newscast, and then it will be coming up and playing the latest STPB newscast.
Right, yeah.
And if,
so smart.
And if we go to a time of day where there hasn't been a newscast in the last 4 hours, mm-hmm. it just automatically dumps the last one.
That's right.
So it is a really smart system. It just, like you say, it plays seamlessly, and it eventually learns what you like.
Yeah, because it's a very, very, very clean interface. You basically just tell it, yeah, I liked that. Basically, there's a button that says interesting, and you just hit it if it's something you liked, and that way it can kind of learn what you like.
Mm-hmm.
And you can skip, just like Pandora or any, you know, Spotify, you can skip an article or a news thing or a show, and it'll go past it, or you can go back.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah. Very, very. I highly recommend to anybody that is listening right now.
What you're not going to get is live radio. That is not a part of this, but you're going to get that programmed, that programmed stream for you.
Yes, it is not live radio, except for the fact that it plays you relatively up-to-date news.
Relatively up-to-date.
So it's not live. But, you know, if something happened in the past half an hour, you know, you'll hear about it on the news bump every hour.
Yeah, so that's very cool. And, you know, they sort of soft-launched it. They're not making a big deal of it right now. But they're over 20 million installs right now.
Oh, yeah.
They were last week.
Yeah, I think it's so smart. And I love how you can choose your local NPR station, and it gives you your local stuff, too. So, mm-hmm. Or, you know, at least a smattering of the local stuff. So it's perfect for the listener that turns on NPR the same way you turn on the radio and just listen, mm-hmm. not looking for specific shows. You listen to that channel.
Right. And, of course, The beauty of it is it's always interesting stuff because it's coming from great sources.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention, if you want to search for something in particular, fresh air or whatever, you can go ahead and search for it, and it will play you something from that vein. Or if you want to search for, you know, computers, it will maybe play All Tech Considered, or it might play a fresh air show that they did on technology. Or maybe eventually they'll play our show if you're in the South Dakota market, or you just love South Dakota so much you listen to us from Amsterdam.
Sure.
You know it.
Couple of questions from Douglas in Winter. From Doug. Are there any ways to clean an inkjet printer, the inkjets, when the printer cleaning process doesn't seem to work?
There's one really easy way, and I'm only sort of kidding, is to put it in the garbage and get a new one.
Uh-huh.
Because inkjet printers are just too cheap now to really work hard at. So unless you've got, you know, an emotional attachment to this printer, or it's very expensive somehow and prints really I can't really think of a reason to hold on to an inkjet printer. Mm-hmm. If it's so bad that the heads just won't get cleaned, and replacing the cartridge with a new cartridge doesn't do it.
That's what his next question was. Does installing a new inkjet cartridge make a difference?
Depends on the printer. Some printers, like HP printers, the head is on the cartridge itself, which is why HP printers, for the most part, their ink is more expensive.
Uh-huh.
Some printers, like models of the Epson or Canon, the print head is actually in the device, and you just put ink in it. So basically, here's a way to sort of tell if you have that type of printer. Mm-hmm. If your cartridges are cheaper than the other brands that you look at, mm-hmm. then your head is probably in the printer, and if it's clogged, new cartridges is probably not going to help. If your cartridges are sort of expensive, this is a relative term, then your heads may be, and especially if it's an HP, then your heads may be on the cartridges themselves, and then replacing the cartridges might be a good idea. Unfortunately, replacing cartridges, especially if it's the heads are on the cartridge, you know, that could be as much as a new printer when you're talking inkjet. So my answer is still go get a new printer.
Yeah. So his second
printers.
We'll give one ahead, little Jeff. Quick hint for him.
Yep.
If he does get a new inkjet printer, make sure to print at least a color page every single week, and you should have those problems of your heads drying up. So.
Yes, or my recommendation would be get a black and white laser printer, and if you really need to print color, you know, take it to a print shop or print it at a print shop online that mails it to you.
I love the laser.
Yeah.
And it's gotten printers, so affordable.
Yeah, they don't clog. So they're getting less affordable, but they have fewer problems by a long shot.
And the second question is related to the Landscapes photography contest that SDPB had or held, I guess. So we picked it's called A Day in South Dakota. That day was Tuesday. And the upload page is still active for those that took photos on Tuesday and are processing or picking the ones they want to put in the contest. And we'll have that open through Sunday night. So if you took photos on Tuesday, they are eligible for the contest to win money. And you can use that thing. And he says, did that turn out to be a lot of work, or did you guys, is that processing the image somewhat automated? Well, no, it's not automated because we don't want, the wrong photos to show up in our Flickr gallery. So we do process those by hand, and it has taken a while because we had over 600 entrants so far into the photo contest, which is great. He says it was sort of fun trying to stay on themes when photo opportunities on the flat plains are not quite so obvious as in the Badlands of the Black Hills. Well, there were four very challenging topics, you know, home, work, connections, and South Dakota. So this was set up to be challenging, I guess. So we knew that going in, but it was great. And so go to sdpb.org, and there's a landscapes button right there on the front page. If you want to see some of these tremendous, and Doug was a contributor, I know, because I put his photos online, was a contributor to this. But if you want to see some of the albums that are out there, these photos from Tuesday are just crazy good. So thank you so much for your interest in that. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to announce the winners, and then we're going to have a People's Choice. So anyway, September 5th, join us for another edition of Tech Radio. I want to thank our guests. Joel Brovelite, thank you so much for joining us today. John T. Meyer and Jeff Litterick in Pier. Remember to hit that Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe.